Driftin' with Gipper Forster.
I've seen the ways of a lot of men. I've wept large tears on my own shore and on others. And I've known the pain of too much living, and known the joy in the touch of a small child's hand. I've loved many people while crying for God in the depths of much air. And I've felt the dagger of life plunge deep into the heart of my soul. And I've allowed it to bleed on inches of earth and miles of thought. I've dreamed my dreams wherever I found rest and gathered many mornings into my pen. I've been asked where I've been and what I've done and why I've gone to the places across the sea and on these shores. Was it that I was looking for wisdom and truth? Was it that I was running away from something or looking for something? Maybe I was seeking adventure and excitement. But it ain't any of these. I only seek to live, and where God leads me, I go, knowing there is a God, but not always knowing where he's at. It's a lust that burns inside some men, and many can control it. But there are those that can't, and heedless of what tongues say, they move on, just living the part they've been given to play, never asking why, but moving when the wind moves, and crying when the mountains cry. I was asked a few days ago how I know there is a God and why I believe. I know it when I feel the dust of the road clogging up my nose so it's hard to breathe. I know it when I look ahead and see miles before me that I've never walked on. And I know it when I find a shelter out in the middle of nowhere to keep me till the rains pass. I've seen God in the mountains I've climbed, in the mornings that have woke me up in time to see the fiery grin of the sun. I felt him close when I couldn't see concrete for maybe 100 miles and could smell the grass growing and breathing. I've known it when I've watched an eagle flying in the cavity of space over my head and could almost hear the silence he was slicing. And I've believed when I've had a dog by my side that was faithful and full of love, even when he was hungry. I've known it at night when I've heard my child cry and when I watched him breathe when he was sleeping and still. I know it when I'm on the back of a horse going fast across the bosom of the earth that ain't been amputated from yet. And I know it when I see the snow fall and hear the tide kiss the lips of the shore I'm standing on. I've seen God when love has made me cry and hate has made me think. Heard his voice when I'm alone and looking to be found in the heart of a city full of strange people. Seen him look through the eyes of a woman and seen him smile when a young girl was singing. That's how I know, and that's why I believe. And a tongue said to me, if you believe and are convinced, how come you don't go to church? How come you smoke grass sometimes and get drunk and sleep with women? How come you got beatniks and hoods and rounders for friends and you cry when the hustlers cry? How come you ain't striving to be holy and belong to no one faith? And I say this, what's holy except the earth? What's one church universal except the earth? And what don't shun any man except the earth? I ain't sought truth because truth's always been mine since the first time I saw a flower grow. And for 24 hours a day, for all of my life, I'm in my church. And in being part of this earth's creation from the poet's hand, I'm holy. If I could show to the world that I had no navel, then I might not need the guidance of all men and the knowledge of all walks. But I know men not by their title, but by men who walk the same miles as me, and who breathe the same air and cry the same tears from the same sadness. I don't ask a man his standing before I take him to be my friend, I can't judge or condemn without being judged and condemned. And if I was, then my debt would be too heavy for my back, and I'd drown in the lake of my own tears. I sleep with women because I find them beautiful. And if you listen, you can hear and feel the love coming from their hearts and souls and not just their bodies. I like to be near them because I'm weak and most times lonely. And they're warm to my asking. And they're wanting the same as me. I smoke grass sometimes and get drunk because I'm a child and rebel against all thing man tries to strive for. I'm human and flesh, and often loneliness causes man to fall. I cry when the hustlers cry because I'm as much a part of them as I'm a part of all of humanity that forms to be one large tear on the face of the earth. I ain't got no tongue denomination in the screaming of voices because I'm sad and turn away when I see God being tugged at by ignorant hands, trying to divide them into sections, each claiming to be right and all others wrong. I have no denomination because there's no such thing. But I do have a faith, and just being alive's given me that. When a man breathes, he's holy. And when a man falls, it's to tell him he ain't God. I've seen cities and countries in my wandering, felt the acts of governments and the slavery of persecution, saw the fires blazing in the eyes of some men and watched the resurrection in others. I've bled as all men have bled and cried as all men have cried, knowing fear in the womb of tomorrow. I've been called cruel and stupid for my way of living and been shunned when my hands got dirty. I've been told I gotta settle down and think of my future. But what is a man's future? How can somebody that don't feel the calling tell another man to live his way? Each man is an independent creation that's got to choose his own dream and his own cross, and only he can bear it. Future for me is what lies ahead, what I can gather inside myself to keep me warm when years put a stop to my movement. When I can look back and see faces of people I've loved and the kindness and holiness I've given. Money in a fireside can never buy that. Future to me is when a man can look up to the sky and say, God, I've done what the calling said. And now it's up to you where I'll go and how warm I'll be and whether or not I'll be lonely. Lonely? Not when you can say I've looked and I've seen, I've been part of. I guess I was meant to be a drifter, but I ain't looking for a place. I've got my place, wherever I'm walking or resting or standing still. My bank account's the miles that are behind me, and my future's what lies ahead, even if it's hunger. God knows me, and I guess that's enough. Daybreak's just outside my window right at this minute, and that's more than man can give me in money. I can see the Pacific Ocean from where I'm sitting, and its smile holds more hope than man can ever offer. Birds are starting to whistle too, and none are talking about war, only living in another day of light. People will be yawning soon and complaining and pushing their kids off to school. The thin pane of colored glass that God puts down to bring the morning in softly will soon be shattered into a million tiny fragments from the cursing of car horns as man seeks out dollars to weigh against his conscience. Who are you, man, crying that this ain't enough? Who are you to doubt when you can breathe and weep and hope? Who are you to scream for peace with a rifle clutched in your fist? I can leave this place of metal and iron and go out into the chapel of my church and put my soul on the collection plate and stay a while. I can rest my feet on the moss-covered roof of hell, far away from your concrete, and look up at the floor of paradise that holds no noise. So can you if you'll stop to listen, if you'll stop to hear. I love you, mankind. I love you because I'm part of you and you're part of me. But I'm crying for you and wondering when you'll have the wisdom not to judge. I'm young and only a pebble on your great beach. I'm a drifter that goes to the places my feet take me. I don't give nothing to your progress but my life. I ain't got a loud voice and I don't stand tall. But I don't want no war in my world, and no hatred to feed the children of my thoughts. I don't want you to destroy the beauty that miles can give and the hope that rains give when it makes things grow. I don't want to trade the ink in my pen for the blood of my sons. Soon I'm going to be moving off into another room of this great house we live in. Gonna see if I can find the secret that'll get Jesus down off the cross. Don't destroy my world with bombs and fire, because to die is real easy. But to live and see morning being born, that's a promise and allows a man to grow.
That selection called Drifting was written and read by Gip Forster. You called your book Drifting, Gip. Why?
Well, Doug, that's exactly what I was doing when I wrote it. And I wrote it more for the people I saw along the road rather than for say, everybody. It's more of a feeling that was given for this book, for this type of person, because although it's been done many, many times for them, it hasn't been done in the way that I think it reaches them. And in this particular way, and of the book Drifting, I think it does reach them. And the title, Drifting, itself is simple, and it's easy to the point and explains everything in one word, really.
You're a drifter yourself.
Well, I don't, a classification of drifter, this is a tough word, but I've drifted around. I've been to different places and seen different things. I've done it without money, not always through choice, but sometimes through choice. And I find that through environment and circumstance, when you haven't got money, that you are cast in with all types of people, and you're not forced, but it's a, well, I guess you could even say forced, to be one of these people, not to look in at them and take notes, but to be part of them through necessity. And in this way, you get to know them much better, and you know them without any phoniness, without any dishonesty. And you are actually a part of them. They look at you as a part of them, as you look at them as a part of you. And I think for any person, this will give them or teaches them a humility that is very, very important in today's living.
Yes. Gip, you've been with people. You seem to like people. Is this why you write?
Well, I think without people, how could anyone write? You know, I mean, people are the thing. I mean, that's exactly where it's at. This is the only thing that gives us the courage or the stamina to go on, is that there are other people, that we can see a reflection of ourselves in other people. And without them, I think, although it sounds very silly, what could man do if you were...
So many of us get fed up with people. Do you find this?
Well, I think this is human nature, that I think it's wrong for a person to say they dislike another person. I think it's right to say perhaps that they don't have any patience with them. I don't see how anyone could dislike anyone else, because in everyone you see a bit of yourself, you know.
Gip, why do you write about the people that you do?
Well, I think, actually, in my own mind, that it's like it's a forgotten world or an ignored world. The people in what many classes the underworld, or anything that is below middle class, is usually by many classes the underworld, although they don't admit it. I think somebody should start writing about them. I don't think this is the type of person that is any less than anyone else, or any better than anyone else, or any more romantic, or whatever have you. But I think, to the point that it is being ignored, and I don't think it should. And I write about these people because no one else seems to want to write about them. I write about them individually, I write about them in groups, and I think it's necessary.
If you look carefully over any city in the secrets of its darkest night, you'll see a ghost descend silently to the attic of its cruelest desires. This ghost is called Death, and she chooses to work mostly at night when it's quiet and eyes are asleep. She carries no Bible and wears no smile. She's not a merciful death nor a poetic one. She is precise in her deeds and asks no quarter, nor does she give any. She is the death of the underworld, the death that other worlds choose to ignore. She is swift and offers no justice where justice is sought. She is the waste collector that reaps what humanity shrugs off and claims no responsibility for. You'll find her in dingy rooms, dark alleys, deserted streets, in garbage cans and in puddles of dirty water. You'll find her in frozen gray snow on streets that hold no people, except maybe the one she's looking to harvest. You won't find her in churches, PTA meetings, clean rooms, happy homes, not usually before midnight and very seldom after 5 a.m. You won't see her in a god of gold or a god of business, not even in the university. She is unchallenged by the ones that can defeat her. She knows there's no opposition. Ignorance is a coward that refuses to face her. Even in discussion, you will not see her. She has no time to enter into your room and listen to your words. You may never see her at all, unless you go where she's naked and look.
Is there any hope, Gip, for institutions such as the church, institutions such as the Rotary Clubs, institutions that strive to promote brotherhood on this planet? Is there any chance of them making an impact?
Well, Doug, I think this is a very difficult question. Yes and no. Yes, that they have started to try and do something. No, to the point that I don't think really they have the impact. They're not striving for the impact, or don't know where it's at to reach what they really want to do. I've been to some of these clubs, friendship clubs and different things, and to see these people, when they look at one another, they're still very alien to one another. They're still in their own little void, in their own little world. But I think once that they, each and every, as an individual, not as a group, but as an individual, begins to think for other people, not for other people, but about other people, to try and help other people, and putting their ideas all together and none being thrown away, that I think possibly in this respect that they might start to change a new thing, rather than, for instance, to build up charities and so on. Let's erase charity altogether. Let's find another way. Let's go a step beyond, and where there's no need for charity. I mean, this is a big, big row to hoe, but I still think if we got started on that, eventually we could make headway in some way, that things would start to disappear rather than feeding them as we're doing now.
So your point of view is not a pessimistic one, then?
Not really, no.
You feel that we can push on, that something can be done?
Yes, I think something can be done. I think we're a long way from it yet. I don't think we have even gotten hold of the reins, but by fumbling around, we eventually have to grab hold of them.
Pick out the line in your last segment of poetry that we heard. She is unchallenged by those who can defeat her. Would this represent your attitude?
Yes, I think so. When men starts to say, well, this group's handling it, so that's all right, I don't have to worry about it. When men start to think as men, as individual men, and going out and doing something on their own without joining groups and without doing this, I think perhaps then we will make a lot of headway.
Yeah. You found in your travels, I'm sure, Gip, that you mentioned earlier phoniness. Do you find that these institutions that you see have an aura of phoniness about them?
This depends on the majority of your group or the minority. If the majority have a phoniness, then you can be sure that that's the way the club is going to more or less move. At least this is what I have found in my own opinion.
I went to one of them friendship clubs tonight. Went to see people of all nations striving for a place and an understanding. Saw him trying to start a fire that kept going out. Heard him talking, couldn't hear him saying nothing. Heard him hoping and praying, and heard the world not listening. I heard a German choir, too, singing, their feet were a-tapping. Heard the song of man that the world won't listen to. And I felt the love they was trying to give and that nobody wanted. Felt the chains and the shoulders and the bars all around them. Knew that Christ at that moment was bleeding real terrible. And I saw the wounds of the crucified and the smile of all them faces around me. And it weren't for themselves they was painting, but each for his own nation and for his own people. And it weren't relaxed, because shame was close by, a-grinning and coaxing and name-dropping. And Montgomery, Birmingham, and Selma was in the eyes of every white man that looked into the eyes of a Negro. And the white man couldn't seem to hold his head up. And the Negro turned away, wondering. And I thought about what Jim said, about every time a Negro fell and was kicked, that Jesus fell on the road to Calvary again and was kicked. And that when they bled, poor Jesus was bleeding harder. And that when they cried, Christ was weeping more and longer. And I thought of Jesus being black and shining shoes in an L.A. bus terminal, or as a white man marching alongside Martin Luther King from Selma to Birmingham, and being shot by a rat fink with blood in his teeth and a hood over his head. And I thought a lawyer saying, niggers is all right, long as they call me mister and sir and bow when they're in the presence of a white man. And I felt my face burn with the fire of ignorance and felt thirsty for the well of compassion that had gone dry when cowards had started hating. And I knew that the world was lusting and masturbating so much that love would be a long time coming and would be raped tenfold before an orgasm could ever be reached. And that love would be a tired old lady when she reached the hearts of nations, not just people who lived in hope and fear. And man, I sat there looking at the difference, with a storm a-raging in my mind, and my heart was pounding and pleading, and my soul was a cripple that wanted to run and march and cry out understanding to any other soul that had listened. And I felt man's fear and how he had to destroy anything he couldn't understand, and how Lee Harvey Oswald was only the instrument that killed a man that was touching greatness, an instrument fashioned by the hands of a civilization that didn't have the guts to listen to its own voice. And how Abe Lincoln said all was born equal, and how equality smashed him to death with its chains, because black was the color that threatened to stand and to sing a little louder. And I thought of the world on trial and being hung with a rope made of flaming tongues, and the body of society being washed with the tears of young children that didn't know the difference. My burning hands told me there was a Judas in all of us, and I felt a bitter kiss on my lips, and the anger in my heart was busting to be free. And I looked at my sister who was with me and who was trying, and at Peter who was just happy at being alive, and at the speaker who was smiling his apology for faltering on words that had been said 10 million times to 80 million deaf mutes. And I wondered how men could march in freedom all over the world and protest and demonstrate when they themselves was not free, no matter what their color. I wondered if the day would ever come that a pervert could walk down the street and stop the first person he saw and say, "Mister, please help me, I'm a pervert." And that person would stop and maybe call to others, and they would all help to try and cure a man who wasn't ashamed to call out, whose sickness was not a curse but a hope for love and understanding between all people and all colors and maybe even all worlds. And all these people was trying to put breath in a drowned world, but all their lungs combined just weren't enough. And in that little room downtown with traffic raging outside, all was afraid to look out the window at the vomit on the streets, and held fast to the perfect miniature world they had created for a few hours and packaged in four walls that had no windows where the windows was. But I felt a power growing in me, and I knew there was other rooms like this all over the world, and that the time for changing was in the air, and young children was learning to sing, and people were starting to rise up now, not with guns and swords in their hands, but with words in their tongues and love in their hearts and songs they ain't afraid to sing. And I left there thinking, well, now at least it started, and that my son one day would bleed with the harvest, but his sons might reap the promise made by a poet a long time ago. And I felt the spring air about me, and the challenge of tomorrow, and I just walk along them streets, digesting the night and the newer birth of men.
This has been Driftin' with Gip Forrester, a production of UBC Radio. Your announcers have been Roy Harrison and Doug Graves. Technical assistants, Ian Keithley and Bill Nicholson. Driftin' was produced by Roy Harrison.